You're listening to Power Producers Shop Talk, where we are refining and redefining the sales game by equipping you with the tools you need to differentiate yourself in the marketplace.
Well, it's like when we audit the mod with Mod Advisor and are able to give them the action items that they're going to use to lower their total cost of risk.
Tactical skills that will help you provide deliverable value to your clients and prospects.
It's going to be a great year in 2022 at Florida Risk Partners now that IPFS is in the game with their total pay strategy. We can write excess and surplus lines and completely remove the agency bill from our agency. People, if you're not using Total Pay by IPFS, you're definitely leaving money on the table.
And action items that you can provide to take your prospects and clients to the next level.
Having partners like Mineral only bolsters the fact that your clients do not care about the insurance. It's all of the value that you're able to add. And with partners like Mineral, who can help with both HR and environmental health and safety, we can't help but win.
This is Power Producers Shop Talk. Production redefined. Are you ready to feel the power?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Power Producers Podcast, where we are refining and redefining the sales game. And we do not record with our guests like Ryan Hanley here. Aaron and I were having a conversation, and it started to take a turn for things we could record and share with you. And I realized that every time Hanley has had me on his show, we're talking for 10 or 15 minutes before I remember he never tells you when you start recording. So
I got a nosebleed. Aaron Gordon here. I'm jumping in. I got a nosebleed 2 seconds into our recording, and I was literally trying to find a tissue. And then he's like, oh, this is staying in. So we're starting off better here on the, you know, redefining the sales game, and no tissues necessary yet.
Well, I'll tell you, man, I mean, it works for Hanley. He's doing well. His podcast is really starting to get some juice again, too. And I'm sure he captures a bunch of stuff that may not necessarily come out when your guard's down a little bit. But I want everybody to know. So I don't, there's not a right or a wrong way to do it. But listen, our guest today, you've heard him. You probably recognize his voice. Got a podcast of his own that honestly seems to be taken off pretty well. And that is the one and only one of four. Still, are you still one of
five,
four?
One of five. There's one more now. Five.
Oh, you're bringing people into the fraternity. Well, I can tell you, if you're one of six, I ain't the next guy. It's not going to happen. But it's Aaron Gordon from the Gordon Companies, the Keep Hustling podcast, and most recently, the drop of his new brand of gear that focuses on that whole culture of hustle. And so when I saw he was doing it, I love the dude. I wanted to make sure that y'all got to hear what he was doing. I'm 100% behind it. If he was doing a capital raise, I'd have been the first seed investor for him. So we're going to talk a little bit about sort of how that brand and how that hashtag has grown, because this is something literally you used to have as just a hashtag on almost every comment, every post, and then it turned into the podcast, then it turned into now you're making this thing a brand, and I think it's going to take off, dude. The whole thing around hustle and going the extra 2 minutes, the extra mile, all of that stuff. I think for the people that are wired that way, we want to surround ourselves with people like that, but also the outward expression so other people know that's a dude that subscribes to the hustle.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me back. Anytime I get to spend with you, next one is going to be in Florida because I don't. You come to New York enough. I need to come visit you. But
let's do it.
I appreciate it. And I think one of the messages, and I'm sure we'll get into all this stuff, is really sometimes they say you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? And sometimes it's the things that you least expect to have an impact on your career that have an impact on your career. So I'm still, people ask me all the time, searching for when I started using the hashtag Keep Hustling. But somehow I fell into it. And I think hustle gets a bad rap in 2024. I know.
Well, Larry Flint didn't help it any. I mean,
yeah. But the thing is, you know this, David, better than anyone else. Everybody defines their own hustle. And I believe that the idea of Keep Hustling, and why I got into the hashtag, and why I'm developing the merch and things like that, which I know we'll get into, is as long as a person defines their hustle and keeps to it, whatever that is, I think that they'll find success. For some people, it's getting on the bike every day. For some people, it's waking up early, but for some people, it's not. I don't believe that a person can't say that they're hustling if they don't wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't think it's necessary.
I agree with you completely. I mean, to me, hustling is just getting the most out of the hours you're putting in, right? Like some people are gonna get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go for a jog and run for a few, 6 miles or whatever. I heard Will Smith one time in an interview where somebody said, how do you stay in such good shape? It doesn't look, they were in a restaurant or whatever, and he was eating like a ton of food. He goes, I run 6 miles a day. I can pretty much eat whatever I want at that point, but we all define it as differently, right? And I don't think that there's a right or a wrong answer to that. I feel like there's a subset of people who feel like if you only get up at 4 a.m, if you only do this, if you only put yourself through the harshest conditions, can you consider yourself as being in the hustle or the grind or whatever synonym we want to use for it? I just don't subscribe to that, because I hustle as much for my family, for my relationship, for my wife, and everything else in my life. It's not just limited to what I do physically or for my business.
And that is spot on to exactly what the way I define and what we're trying to build at Keep Hustling. And that is, or I should say hashtag Keep Hustling. And that is that I believe the two most important things a person can do is define their hustle personally and professionally. So I don't think that people should lose that personal side of hustle, and then stick with that hustle when times get tough. So my tagline for the podcast, for the Keep Hustling podcast, is, and everyone should listen to David's episode, it was one of the first episodes, an incredible episode, but it is getting past the why to the how. So everybody talks about what's your why? But the answer is, every single person, from the richest person in the world to the person who's lost it, who hasn't made it, who will make it, has had that moment or those moments in their career and in their life, personally and professionally, where they've had to just push through a little bit. And if you keep hustling through that little piece, and maybe it's you look down at your sweatshirt, the one I'm wearing today, if you can see, it says hashtag keep hustling, persistent pays, and we can get into the different taglines. But if you are persistent through that, or you view it as a mindset or a lifestyle, or you realize that your dreams are always in action and you'll never quit, then you'll see success, most importantly, through personal satisfaction, let alone dollars and cents.
Yeah, I think too, it comes down to being able to define it. You said that a couple times already, but you need to define what this means to you, number one. And then once you define it, I'm the type of person, I'm not going to say that I come up with these massive mind maps, but I'm going to write down like several things that I can commit to that are going to allow me to hit that objective on a daily basis. And then I want to check each one of those things off every single day. And I think that, throughout my professional career, regardless of what industry it's been in, the people who write goals down and commit to them are far more likely to push through adversity and adhere to those goals than the ones who just have the broad mantra of what they want to do with no real defined action steps. And I think Dave Ramsey had a really good quote one time. I don't subscribe to everything that Dave says, but he says that goals are dreams in work clothes. And I agree with that. I think that you have to take your dreams and think as big as you possibly can, but then define finite goals that can be accomplished around those. And then it's amazing what you can accomplish, right? And then the other part, and the part that makes it difficult for us as imperfect human beings, is actually committing to those and doing whatever it takes, obviously within moral boundaries and everything, to make those things happen. Perfect example. Last 2 years, I ran as hard or harder than anybody on the planet to go out, speak, engage with people, be gone from my family, and all of that. And I think that sometimes the perception is that family suffered during that. No, you know who suffered? Me. I suffered mentally. I suffered physically, maybe even sometimes emotionally, because my family will never suffer. So it was always having to take the horrible time to fly back so that I could be home for gymnastics practice, or I could be home to take the kids to the ball game, or even go away to the beach for a weekend, because I'm so committed to making sure that family doesn't suffer, that it took its toll on me. So when I started looking at what my next several years were going to look like, I think a lot of people that would get accustomed to that lifestyle of being out there and being public and having, all of the recognition and stuff that we all love and crave as humans that go with that, would think it was a really hard decision for me to say, nope, I'm out. I'm not doing this for the next 2-3 years. If I ever go back out again, I've done it enough. I've punished myself enough. I need to take care of me. And by me doing that, I'm going to be the best for my clients. I'm going to be best for the people in Killing Commercial. And I'm going to be the best for my family. And you know what? I was 100% right. It wasn't a difficult decision. And I think there's a lot of people out there that probably question that. But I know that because they've asked me. But the other reality to that is too, man, I can only say the same thing so many ways. You know what I mean? I got to come up with some new material. When people go see a stand-up comic, you know, live, and they go see them three or four times, you're not going to go do that if it's the same jokes and the same delivery every time you go out there. You have to take time of let your brand recharge, let new ideas come to you, and then package that in a way that it actually makes sense for you to go out and for people to enjoy interacting and hearing from you.
100%. And I think the other thing that a lot of people, and I'm not going to rip on the hustle gurus or those people, because every once in a while when you're scrolling, they do actually inspire you. And I appreciate that. But one of the most important things that I've discovered and people have reached out to me since I've kind of started developing this and the podcast and everything else like that. One of the most important things in a person's life hustle is taking the time to redefine and recalibrate that. So I thought you were going to say, and I think also super important is when people write down their goals and when they're focused on them, it's also much easier to reassess those goals. Because if you never know where you're trying to get, whether you get there, which you will have a better chance of getting there if and when you actually write down your goals. But also, if you don't get there, why? What happened along the way? What happened when I defined it? I'm not going to let that define me as a failure. I'm going to say, here's how I learned from it. I'm going to set goals either further ahead because I achieved those, or in a more realistic way because I can do that. You know, an easy way to look at that is physically. A lot of people set insane physical goals that they'll never get to. But then 6, 12 months in, they look at it and they say, okay, but what have I accomplished? And how can I make this a long-term thing? And I think that's really what it's about. And I feel lucky that I fell into this thing. It's been, the podcast has been a lot of fun. I should have listened to you and done it earlier. But it's been a lot of fun. It's helped my career as an insurance.
Isn't that crazy though, to think that something that really, I mean, it does have to do with what you do because it's who you are, but it doesn't really translate directly to what we do for a living. And even with Power Producers, it translates to what I do, but my audience is people who want to emulate some of the things we talk about and learn from people who have already been where they're trying to go. But what's crazy is the stuff I put out on LinkedIn, I get interactions from CEOs, CFOs. I get direct messages from people who say, David, my agent doesn't act like this. This isn't how they operate. And I don't know if you write in my state or if you have somebody in your network who does, but I'd love it if you could put me in contact with somebody who operates the way that you do. I never in a million years would have thought that happened. But I also am the same guy who says, be consistent in who you are. Be consistent in putting out your content, and your audience will always find you. Always. At some point, you're going to hit that point of inflection where the right person or the right group hears what you have to say, and then it blows up.
And I think as you've told me, people want to do business with you. So if people like you and they like your energy and they like what you represent, they'll eventually find a way to do business with you. Now, obviously, they have to have a need for your product or service. You can't sell medical supplies and expect someone who's not in the medical field to buy them from you. But I think that the people who are attracted to your brand, to your message, and to your energy, I mean, there's always going to be stale people. And I've found that when you embrace who you are, and you and I are similar in this, obviously, I hope to really embrace it the way you do. But, you know, when you're a high energy, loud personality, not in a bad way, that I don't mean that in an egotistical way or that you're going to, you know, tick people off.
No, but the end of the day is, to your point though, like the fact you even had to say that means that people will perceive you that way. Right?
And you know what? I'm okay with that. What I've come to realize is I'm not the guy who's cursing at someone on an airplane because they're, you know, sneezing. So that's not the loud person that I am. I stay away from politics in the public forum and in social media, but it's really just, if you don't like the fact that I'm high energy and that I believe in the hustle and that I believe in just trying to put my best
foot forward.
It's
not your audience.
And probably us doing work together is not going to be great, because I also like when my clients have a certain level of energy and when they're building something in the same way. So,
well, and I mean, the thing is, man, there's always the more you're visible, the louder you are. And I mean, I don't necessarily mean you being louder, but the more your voice is broadcast to a wider audience, the more people that are going to take shots at you out of the bushes all the time. And you know what? I think we all initially probably can get really offended and butthurt by stuff like that. But the reality is, I've come to the point now where if you're taking shots at me and I know my motive is pure and I know my message is on point and I know where my heart is and why I do what I do, I'm okay with it. It means I'm doing something right.
Dare I say, it's also good for your brand.
Yeah.
For your reach. So that's the funny part is the people who stimulate sometimes I look at the negative posts, the negative comments on my posts, and I realize that by that person trying to take a shot at me, they actually help me succeed.
They're helping you.
It's because the post takes off more, there's a greater reach, or someone else sees it, or people come to defend you or whatever else, when that's not my intention. And I don't, it's not something that I'm looking for, but it's just funny how, especially in the social media world, it actually just helps me and inspires me. So.
Yeah. And it forces you to be a better, I don't even know a better what. It forces you to get thick skin and just be completely agnostic to any of that stuff. I put something out on TikTok this weekend because I smoked some barbecue at the house. I don't profess to be like, you know, I'm not Bobby Flay or Gordon Ramsay for crying out loud, but I enjoy doing it and the food tastes good, which is what I'm interested in more than anything else. But I always know if I'm going to put something out that there's going to be plenty of people say, oh, why'd you do it that way? Or that looks terrible. Or you did it wrong or whatever. And I put this thing out on TikTok of the grand reveal of this pork shoulder that I did this weekend. These two dudes started fighting with each other in my comments about who was right. And I just watched the thing gain thousands of views over the rest of the afternoon. And Andy's like, why do you let this continue? I said, I'm benefiting from it. I'm having more visibility.
And I'm enjoying the food too. So there you go.
Yeah, 100%, man.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot that a person who, as you say, when you realize that what your motives are and when you realize that you're trying to do well by doing good and you just put your best foot forward to hustle, I think that there's every person gains. And the beauty of what I'm trying to create at hashtag Keep Hustling and the brand and the merch and all the stuff that we've put together is that every person should achieve their greatest success. Personally, professionally, kids. I mean, I get such a, one of the great things about the podcast is my daughter, my 12 and a half year old, took a bunch of magnets, stole them from me, but that's okay. I appreciated it. And when I walked in for parent teacher conferences in her class, every single locker, her and all of her friends had it. And they asked me for merch and things like that. And while, you know, it has nothing to do with the school there or anything like that, I said, if one kid says, you know what, keep hustling, who's that guy? Or they see the license plate or they say whatever, and they're inspired to chase their dream or to take that further, then I've achieved something.
So where does it come from, man? Because I know where it comes from for me. It comes from me growing up and being in organized sports from a very early age through, you know, the time that I played baseball in college. And, you know, it's always the, even if you hit a routine ground ball, you need to run as hard as you can to first base. And I mean, that was beat into my head as a kid. It carries with me. I mean, it carried with me to when I was playing slow pitch softball as an adult and like would beat out routine ground balls to second base because I was sprinting as a big dude and nobody expected me to actually run it out. And next thing you know, I get on base and it still infuriates me. We went to the Rays game yesterday and I watched multiple plays where somebody hit a ball in the hole at short or where the third baseman had to make a less than optimal throw. And the guys that sprinted and hustled either made it really, really close or in some cases got on base. And the guys who didn't basically gave up before they, you know, halfway through the play. And so, you know, I've always told my kids that, and to the point where you'll even hear Grayson, you know, when we're watching games now, like, come on, man, you can't put a better effort in than that or whatever else. But I know where it came from for me. And it's because I had those coaches that invested in my life that really probably didn't have to as little league coaches and said, this is why you do what you do. And look, people can have their opinions on Pete Rose and whether or not he should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame for all of the off the field stuff that he did. There will never be a better example of hustle in the entire athletic world, in my opinion, than that guy. And that was my favorite player growing up. So I emulated that part of Pete Rose's life. I dove head first. I ran hard. I didn't give up on the play until the play was over. And I think we had some really good role models back then, and we still do today. But I chose to follow the people who operated that way because that's what resonated with me. So I'm interested, from your perspective, where did it come from? Where did you get the influence? Who inspired you? Who was your leader or your mentor that taught you that?
I appreciate the question. I did play a lot of organized sports, and I never thought of that angle. But for me, I grew up in a house where my parents were incredible influences, and I didn't realize it at the time. And I know you and I have discussed this in the past, but first of all, learning and forgetting about the fact that I came into the same business as my father of blessed memory, but the knowing when you grow up and you're in a house where you know that your father started in a career at age 16, literally my father started in the insurance industry, and you've heard about him, and our business has been around for 55 years. He was peeling shrimp at a diner, and he heard two people talking about the fact that they were going to change the way that their company paid messengers. So because it was a paper world and binders and quotes and things like that had to get endorsements, had to get signed, they were going to change the way they paid their messengers, and they were going to offer higher pay for heavier, or for them to take more packages on the road in a day, they would get higher pay for reimbursement for taxis as opposed to taking the subway, because they needed to incentivize people to take more packages. And my father said, and I think you probably can guess where this is going, I'll take the higher pay and take the subway. And realizing that that was literally where his career started, a 60-year career, regardless of the fact that I came into the business because my siblings are the same way, there's a certain level of, I feel that if I don't put my best foot forward for my profession and also for my family, seeing that. And my mother is, if not ahead of that in hustle, because I saw what she did at home also. And my mother is an immigrant. My mother was born in a displaced persons camp right after the Holocaust in Toronto, Italy. So literally with the clothing on her back and my grandparents, and they built a business in Syracuse, New York. I think that when you think about role models and mentors, the most important thing that a person can do to influence the next generation of their children, their employees, their students, or anyone who's watching them, is do it themselves. And that, to me, seeing that when a kid grows up and realizes what the actual day-to-day hustle is and was, it's incredible. And that's, and seeing that firsthand from my parents who built a business, there have been no greater influences on my life.
So how much of that did you recognize growing up versus how much do you recognize as an adult looking back? That's the part that interests me, because I think, you know, granted, my father and I have had our differences over the years, but I would never take away from him the fact he did what he had to do to provide for his family. And his hustle was different than what mine is today. But I, again, to your point, I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer to what your hustle is, as long as you define it yourself and you put the goals in place to achieve it. But I mean, I can remember there were times that he would have to travel to steel mills as a risk manager for U.S. Steel or Florida Steel or Birmingham Steel, wherever he was. And he would be gone 3 or 4 nights out of the week traveling, coming back. And I mean, as a kid, I think you look at that and you say, man, I wish my dad was around more to throw the ball with me and everything else. As an adult, you might still carry some of that with you, but you can also look back and say, I get it. You know, now I have my own family, my own kids. I want to make sure that they have the best of everything, that I provide for them in a way that I wouldn't be able to provide otherwise. And I can respect it now in an objective way, as opposed to being a kid and sometimes feeling like, yeah, I get you want to do all of this stuff, but you're kind of robbing me of having time with dad at home. And, you know, I'm interested from your perspective, because I don't know that maybe you were in the same general situation with mom and dad being in the agency, you know, locally, but I'm sure your dad had business dinners and all kinds of other things that he had to do. And when we're kids, I don't know that we can process that the same that we can when we're older and we turn into adults and kind of going through it on our own.
100%. And I think that there is no way to understand or to internalize the influence. And I think especially from a positive light, because everybody focuses, as you said, when you're a kid, on the things that don't seem quote unquote fair, or the things that they don't think their parents are doing correctly because they're not home, or because some parents are tougher, some parents are less tough. Some parents work a different way, but and this is also something that I've learned in recording my podcast, is that the influence that our parents have, or those that mentor us, there are people who unfortunately don't have their parents around, but everybody, and that's also obviously has an impact, but I don't think it's possible for me to honestly say that I realized it at the time, but I look back at it now. And the other part that's super interesting, and I know that I hate to go back to say that you're my mentor and things, because that will get to your head, but looking at the family time, I think when a person realizes that if they have intentional family time, which I was blessed that my father was big on and my mother was super big on, but she didn't travel for business, that you realize later when you have your own family, how much of an effort that was. Red-eyeing back to make it to a baseball game is not something that a person has to do, is not something that a parent has to do. When you realize that, or you realize that running a business, and my parents made sure to take off those 3 days to be at the basketball tournament, that wasn't moving mountains, it wasn't earth-shattering, but it probably would have been easier to be in the office one of those days, or to be able to not be totally offline, especially in the day before smartphones and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that had a huge impact on me. And I think you also realize that the parents that are intentional and the mentors that are intentional, and you see what they're able to do that's not 100% killing themselves, also has an impact on you, because you realize that if you do those small things for your family and the small things for your business and the small things, as you say, the extra 2 minutes, it's not the extra 10 minutes or the extra 2 hours, it's the extra 2 minutes in life and in business, that has a tremendous impact.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the other thing is, if we channel what we perceived as kids to be unfair or what we didn't like, and I think it's healthy to remember a little bit of that, because it helps you when you bring your own family into the world. And I mean, that's the whole thing, man. You know, if we don't feel like, and I want to be very, very clear, this is not me taking a shot at my parents at all. We never went without. My mom, God love her, she had us at every practice, every game. I want to be very, very clear about that. I have no disrespect, no ill feelings, none of that. But I think that I would be remiss if I didn't say, as a kid, I always wanted to have that time. And so because I grew into an adult with my own family, I still remember what it was like. I just made the commitment. When it's dad, will you throw the ball? The answer is always yes, you know, period. There is nothing I'm doing professionally that is more important than if I'm, especially in home hours. You know, now if Ethan walked into my office right now and said, dad, let's go out and have a catch in the parking lot, that's a different answer. But if I'm at home on my laptop in the living room or whatever, which is pretty rare that I even do that, and he said, dad, you said you'd play catch with me today, I'm going to shut down what I'm doing and I'm going to play catch. And the reason why is because I made a commitment to myself before I ever had kids that that's how I was going to respond to those things, because I didn't want my kids to have to throw the ball with the other, you know, the guy across the street, or, you know, have some of their friends come over to play with them, when really what they want isn't necessarily throwing the baseball, it's my attention.
And I think that being intentional about that also helps you hustle when you're not around. As you said, you know, you obviously now you're taking that time to not travel as much, but even when you're traveling, I think a person can feel inspired to do that and to take those trips and say those difficult goodbyes that we all do when we take those business trips. I was been away the last 2 weeks, which I haven't done in a long time, 2 weeks in a row. But then when you're home and you're intentional and you have those moments, I think that it kind of makes it all worth it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, because you want to produce or whatever so much when you're focused on that, so you don't have to when you're doing the other time. And I mean, I'm a big believer in time blocking your calendar. And if this is what I joke about it. I tell people, I'm like Ron Burgundy in Anchorman. If my calendar it's like him reading the teleprompter, and whatever's on there is what he reads. That's how I operate with my calendar. If my calendar says this is personal planning time, I need to commit to that. I need to shut everything down that could be a distraction. And I need to focus on being the best I can at that. And I think, you know, you made a comment earlier about without smartphones and everything else. My gosh, life was so much easier back then, because I think if nothing else, all the technology has done nothing more than contribute to the entitlement of instant gratification. And I here's what I've come to know. And I know that there are going to be people who think I'm nuts by saying this, but I know that I'm right based on what I've gotten from feedback. Your client doesn't need you to answer the phone the second that it rings. Your client needs you to get back to them in a timely fashion, unless it's an emergency. So the way that I go about it is, if I've got time blocked where I'm doing things in the office, I block 50 minutes out of every hour. And then the last 10 minutes, I can read my email. I can listen to voicemail. I can make quick responses on email. I can return calls. And when it's time for me to start up again, I start up again. But during that time, when I'm supposed to be focused on the task at hand, I close out of my Outlook. I shut the ringer off on my cell phone. I put my office phone on Do Not Disturb, and I don't check it. I'm not going to lose an account if it takes me 45 minutes to get back to somebody. And the reality is, if you start on the hour, every minute that you go towards that 50 minutes, you're getting back a quicker response time to the person to begin with. So this whole thing that you need to be on the spot and answer right away, I agree you need to be quick and recognize that you have to be intentional in getting back to people, but it doesn't have to be right this second. I don't have a single client in my book of business that demands me to pick up the phone and answer it right then and there with the answer.
100%. That's spot on. And I'll tell you the other thing. So I stole this from you at the beginning of every day. I don't know if you still do this, but at the beginning of every day and at the end of every workday, when I plan when I'm going to be at my office, I have a half hour at the beginning of every day and at the end of every day where I call it office time in my calendar, as you told me, the first time we spoke. Become a slave to that. Obviously, if someone needs to meet with me in the morning, I can work that around. But when I get to the office, I'm going to have that time. And I found even at night, for me, and this is my hustle, I'm not telling other people how to do things. Before I get into bed, I just do a quick scroll through my emails that came through. And if there's anything that I need to respond to, I'll respond to it then. That could be at 10 p.m. That could be at 1 o'clock in the morning. But for me, it helps me sleep at night so that in the morning, I'm not getting up to a crisis that I could have triaged, not solved. By the way, the other thing that I find amazing being in business long enough, and you've been doing it longer than I have, but most people don't actually expect that you can do anything. They just want you to respond and say, I got you. I'm on this. We're going to handle this. I'll get to it in the morning, put a reminder in my calendar, things like that. But I find it amazing. Some people call like 2 o'clock in the morning because they have a claim or something like that. They don't actually expect you to answer. And if you do, they're like, what are you doing, you psychopath? Just going back in the morning.
Well, I actually, younger in my career, I used to tell people, like, if you call me at 2 a.m, I'll answer my phone. You better have something to talk to me about. Like, I am that guy, right? But and even to today, if somebody called me in the middle of the night, even though my phone's on vibrate, I'm still going to wake up and look at it. And if my client's calling me at 2 a.m, I probably will roll over and answer the phone because they wouldn't be calling me unless they absolutely needed me. They're not just calling to see how I'm doing or to say, hey, make sure you check this out tomorrow. But to your point, I call that time HPT, high priority tasks. And the reason I do that is because I think that also one of the things that we miss on is everything is not ranked in terms of priority, right? So I want to make sure that when I've got a work list of things I have to do, there are things that have to be done before the end of the day today. There are things that are important, but it's okay if I push it off till tomorrow. And then there are some things that I just need to get it done by the end of the week. So at the end of every day, everything that has to be done that day, that gets done. And the things that don't become the high priority tasks for that first block in the morning. So I can get those done before the day goes on because I know I'm going to add to it as the day goes. And then if I have time left over, I'm going to hit one or two of those other things that may not be necessarily mission critical. Me writing a blog post is not as important as me making sure I get the signed renewal app with the appropriate documentation over to an underwriter so that coverage can be confirmed bound. That's got a timeline on it. Me writing a blog post doesn't. Doesn't mean that I excuse writing the blog post. I just put it where it ranks in terms of what I need to get done during the day. The problem is that if I put that off for 4 or 5 days, that becomes an increasingly more important task. If I've committed that I'm going to publish one post a week, I don't do that if I don't do my stuff. So, you know, it takes a little bit of an adjustment. And I don't remember if it was Micah or Trey. I know it was one of the Max Revenue guys posted about something similar last week. And it was right along the lines of what I just said. You know, I'm still very much old school to a certain degree, even though we have a massive tech stack in the agency. I operate off legal pads and lists, man. Like I have to have it written down and in front of me. Probably the most tech savvy thing that I've done is if I've got like a significant goal that I want to achieve, I'll put it as the home screen on my phone so that every time I look at my phone, that goal's in the background and I can see it and I can know that I need to do something to get closer to that. But usually that's not really like something work related. It's a picture of me. Like right now, it's a picture of me and Annie in Central Park, knowing my goal is that we get back up there in the fall, you know?
Yeah,
so I
need to New York
that
City.
Every day to figure out what I need to do today to make sure that that happens. But, you know, there's a lot of intentionality to it. And I think that anybody's capable of doing it. So I hear from people, well, I've just never, nobody's ever taught me or I've never learned. Bull crap. You know, if you want the answer to something, we're in the internet era. And to the exact point I just made with instant gratification, there is literally nothing I can't find the answer to on Google or YouTube. Like if I've got to go much past that, then maybe it is a little bit difficult, but I don't know of anything I've needed the answer to in the last decade that I've not been able to go on the internet and if not find an exact answer, at least a couple of opinions. Like I'll give you a perfect example, man. Our Peloton's 5 years old. That thing has been rode into the ground and largely by Annie, not me. But when I do get on it.
No, she rides it well. You ride it into the ground.
Yeah, I do. She does. She rides it well. And I get on that. I need a Clydesdale, not a show pony. Okay. I need something that can carry the weight. But when I do get on it, it's like I told her, any issue that would have existed on the bike is only going to be exacerbated by me getting on it. And so we're in this power zone challenge now, and we were having a problem. I didn't even realize it at first, but the seat was slipping down. It kept slipping and slipping and slipping. And then the last couple of days, last couple of rides I did, it actually bottomed out while I was in the middle of my ride. And that is not a comfortable feeling when you're clipped into pedals on a bike like that. Like my left knee still hurts today because it did it to me on Saturday. And so immediately I'm thinking, well, let's go see what's going on. Well, we find out that there was a recall on seat posts and we didn't realize it. I probably ignored it or it went to my spam. And so we fill out the form, got a seat post. They actually overnighted it to us. We got it yesterday, put the new seat post in. But this is actually multiple lessons here in one story. I'm so committed to the fact that I agreed to do 4 rides a week for a team of people I've never met before, that we reached out to local friends who have Pelotons to find out if they did the seat recall. They did. One of our friends stepped in, gave us their post, and we were just going to give them the one we got in the mail back. So I thought this fixed the problem. I'm on the bike doing my 45-minute ride Saturday. Boom. It was the worst one yet. I'm like, oh, wow, I thought that would have fixed the problem. Let's go see what's going on. So then I find out that the sleeve that goes in, that the post goes into the sleeve, it wears out, but it's friction-based. So you can tighten the knob as hard as you want, but if it's not getting the friction in the back, it's still going to slide down. And it was so bad that I could just like barely tap it and it would go all the way to the bottom, even with the new post. So I'm like, I find myself in Reddit, which by the way, is another rabbit hole you can go down. If you can't find it on Google or YouTube, the people there are next level probably. But then I find out this is like a known problem. Everybody has it. They allege it's a design flaw. I don't know if it is or it isn't. 5 years of riding a bike, as many miles as that one is, I would expect there to be issues. And this is the first one we've had. So I'm not taking a shot at Peloton on this. If anything, their customer service to flip that post around was second to none. And in addition, when we realized maybe it's the sleeve, we called back. They're sending us a sleeve at no charge. But here's what I found out. I found out that in order to get friction, even if the sleeve has deteriorated, you can go and buy grip tape for a skateboard. And I got this stuff. I found it wasn't skateboard grip tape, but it was the same kind of stuff we would use to make stairs non-skid. It was about an inch wide. And so I put it on the back so it overlapped just enough to where it would go down the side. And then I could roll it over to the very narrow part on the back. And I did that on both sides to make it extra thick on that back part where it needs to make contact. And oh my goodness, for $5, I fixed the problem. Now, why did I do that? Number one, because I committed to a group of people that I was going to do something, and I'm going to hold my word when I say that. Number two, I need to do it because I committed to myself. I was going to be part of this challenge, and it helps me in my journey to live a physically fit lifestyle. And number three, I did it because if there's a way for me to fix it now instead of having to wait, I'm going to do that. Now, my initial response was I bought a brand new bike plus, and it's getting delivered tomorrow morning. When the reality is I probably could have gotten a few more years out of this, but I'm going to gift this one. Once I get everything fixed on it, I'm going to gift it to my sister-in-law and brother-in-law because they've wanted one and just haven't pulled the trigger. So we're going to give them that one. We're going to keep the new one. But if this happens again with the new one, I know how to fix it at this point.
There is such an important keep hustling lesson there. And I don't even know if this was intentional, but one of the things that we've built is goals in sight, never quit. And when a person sees the end goal, getting back on the bike, or even more, committing to getting on the bike, and something outside of your control, the bike physically doesn't work the way it's supposed to, so many people quit. And I'm not calling people quitters. I'm just saying that if a person embodies the keep hustling lifestyle, the mindset, realizing that their dreams are in action, realizing that goals in sight never quit, that a person can actually achieve things that they never thought they could just because they've committed to it. And I'm not saying that you should have gotten in your car, driven 10 hours each way just to get on the bike.
What you do is you find another way to solve the problem is what happens.
I thought you were going to say that you found a friend with a bike and rode their bike.
Well, I was going to do that, but I thought it might be a little bit weird for my big sweaty rear end to be on somebody else's bike. And I'm not even, but what the other thing I did was I had accountability. I had accountability to a group of people. Granted, the only other two people in that challenge group that I know are my wife and Josh Gurley. And even if they were the only two who knew, they would probably forgive me if I would have quit. But it's
not
all
Josh.
The people who don't
not
know.
Josh. You don't want to give them that ammo.
But it's probably two people, you know, it's probably a group of people that would have said, you let us down. You didn't hit your numbers, regardless of what it was. I sent a Facebook message to the coach or the lady who's leading the group and like, look, here's where I'm at. I've not dealt with this before. What do I do? I said, I don't really feel comfortable asking somebody else if I can ride their bike. That might be a little bit weird. Is there another way that I can skin the cat? We have the Peloton tread. Can I get on that and do workouts? She said, you know what you can do? You can take the app. You can go to, if you have a gym membership, you can go to the gym. You can get on one of their bikes. You can do your best to know what zone you're in, but at least you're going to record the ride and be able to go where you need to go. For the challenge. And I'm like, that's where I was headed. And then I ended up getting down the Reddit rabbit hole and I was able to solve it and still do it on my own bike, which was the preferred method because I'm anal about my metrics. I paid for the upgraded PowerZone Pack app. And like my whole thing is I compete with myself in everything because that's my biggest competition in my mind. I'm not saying there's not people way better than what I do than me. What I'm saying is I got to get past myself first before I can even think about that. And so
that's the hustle.
I love the fact that they have the graph. And my goal is to try and make my results be as close to that graph as possible every single ride. And if it's not, I get irritated and I get upset with it. But, you know, that's the end. At the end of the day, I mean, that's just who I am, man. That's how I'm wired. And I think that we're all capable of it. But the other point I want to make, and I allude to it, is, and I do agree with a lot of the gurus on this stuff. I just said it. Our biggest competition is ourself. It's our own mind. It's getting past it, right? And I'm thinking, and to give you an example, 2 weeks ago, I needed to do a ride as part of this challenge that we're in. I had just gotten done throwing out about 30 bags of mulch in the backyard. We had cut the grass and done all of that stuff. And my normal move is to immediately jump in the pool and cool down. And Annie was, you know, she brought me over a thing of ice water and she would said, I'm going to go get my bathing suit and come in. I'm like, well, if you want me to swim, you're going to have to wait. I still have my ride I have to do. She goes, you're going to get out of the pool to go in and do your ride. I said, I'm absolutely going to get out of the pool to go in and do my ride. And it goes back to this, man. I didn't start weighing over 300 pounds because I just got fat one day. I got my weight up because I skipped one time and I made the commitment to myself at 50 years old. If you're younger and you're out there listening to this, number one, go ahead, make fun of me, you know, for weighing as much as I do or did. But the other part of that is like, I didn't listen when I was your age, like younger people. I thought that my metabolism was always going to allow me to eat two Big Macs and everything. Even into my 30s, being able to put on lean muscle mass and increase your metabolism and cut carbs and drop 10 pounds in a week, there's a chemical reaction that changes in your body and it makes it infinitely more impossible for you to drop weight like that. And I can tell you this, I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, number one, I will hit my target weight. And number two, I will never go back because it is brutal trying to take the weight off at the age that I'm at now. It's taking me 5 or 10x longer to do it, even though I'm doing the exact same things. You know, I've made a few tweaks in my daily routine. I don't eat before noon every day. You know, that saves me about 1,000 calories of me eating a big breakfast, which was always my favorite. But at the end, and people will argue and say, well, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Well, it, by definition, you're breaking the fast. So it's still breakfast if I eat it at noon. It's just, I'm not eating, you know, an exorbitant amount. And guess what? My body has changed to the point I'm not hungry when I wake up in the morning. It's just not going to, it doesn't happen like it used to. I drink these Topo Chico. When I get to the office, I have a cup of black coffee and one of these, and the bubbles from this in my stomach help me feel full until noon. And then guess what I do at noon? I eat a reasonable sized portion of something to eat, and I track everything in my Fitness Pal on my phone. You would think it was rocket science. It's not. It's literally being accountable to the goals that you set and putting mechanisms in place that hold you accountable through daily reporting in real time. If I know that I've eaten more calories than I should eat over the course of the day, I can do something about that. I can go walk a couple laps around the neighborhood. I can jump on the bike or the tread for a second workout. I can lift weights or whatever, but having my Apple Watch that I can close the rings on, my Fitness Pal that integrates with that, my scale that integrates with both of them, like everything I have, even though I'm leveraging technology, is all about accountability and seeing the results in incremental progress. Now, 15 years ago, if I only lost 2 pounds in a week, that would be an epic failure. Now I'm high-fiving everybody if I can do that. And it's not about losing 15 in a week. It's slow and steady wins the race. It's losing 2 pounds a week over 2 months that puts me at 16 that I'm never going to go back. And by not having those drastic swings, it also helps you stay committed to the goal, because it's little steps that lead to big gains.
So, and I want to, not to give Peloton any free advertising, although it'd be sick if they
come on, Peloton
podcast and my podcast.
Yeah, let's get somebody on here. Wilpers, what are you doing, man? Yeah, get off the bike and come on a podcast one time.
But I think that one of the things that people realize the longer that they commit to exercise, and you hit it right, you hit that nail right in the head, and it's the same thing as keep hustling, is it's about you. And that's why I also love the power zones. It's not about hitting the other person's metrics. It's about your gains. And there's nothing more motivational. You're right. Every once in a while, when you're below that graph, you just have to kick it into high gear, because it ticks me off just like it ticks you off to be below that line. But when you look at the progress, and you can really see the progress when you commit to these things, I am sure that if you're looking at your outputs, and when at the end of this challenge, you take your power zone ride, your fitness test, when you see the delta in your zones, that is keep hustling. That has nothing to do with the fact that, and I'm sure that in this challenge that you're doing, there are people who look a lot different than you. There are people who are in different shape, better, worse, younger, older,
100%.
Different demographic. But that the whole thing about the power zone is you are committing to yourself.
It's you.
Committing to your hustle and committing to your hustle, but you're committing to the hustle. You're not saying, I'm not going to do it. It's, and by the way, another thing, it's not 7 days a week.
No, nope, it's not also, 7 days a week. And I think, you know, again, not that we're going to give Peloton a ton of free advertising, but I guess it's a little bit too late for that. The reality is they've done a really good job of creating a community around that too. Like, as crazy as it sounds, I can't really see who, because I don't wear my glasses when I'm on it. But just the fact that I see people high-fiving me over in the corner while I'm on my ride, I'll go back and high-five them back every single time. And, you know, it's funny you say that, especially about the delta between when you start and when you finish, because Gurley and I have both been talking about this. And he's like, man, this zone two is too easy. I said, you didn't push yourself hard enough on your test. And I said, that's the thing. I said, I'm in the same boat. I said, I was in much worse shape than I am now when I first started getting ready for this. But the reality is, if I look back on it, I'm the only one who can push me. So I needed to push myself harder so I got more out of these workouts. Now, reality is, I also didn't want to have a heart attack, you know, coming from the couch onto the Peloton. So I needed to do it in a reasonable way. So I already know what I need to do. I do need to push harder, but I'm also building the endurance. And there's something to be said for just completing the challenge and getting all the rides in, even if it's not at 110%. If I can just do it at a rate where I'm burning the calories I need to burn to make me better for the next challenge, I'm going to push myself on the test at the end, and I'll be in charge of how hard I do that. And I know that I know where I can push the boundaries to at this point.
I want to comment on something that you said, and that is the power of building a community. And that's really what we're trying to build at the Keep Hustling Shop, keephustlingshop.com. I'm going to give myself the free advertising you asked me to come on. So that's what we're going to do.
Dude, that's the whole reason I had you on here, man.
That's it. But, and I believe it's not about the profits. We've kept the pricing as reasonable as we could. I am not here, at least right now. Again, some big brand wants to come and buy us, and I can make a bunch of profit, no problem.
Come on, Damon. What are you doing, Damon?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to get a shark in the Peloton, Wilpers and Damon. But I think that that community, people don't realize the impact that they can have on others just by being part of that community. And that's really what Keep Hustling is about.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, here's the other thing, man. It was different when we were kids. I think, and I'm not saying everybody grew up and turned into a mature adult. There's still plenty of dudes I know that are the same guy they were back in junior high, you know, all of that. But the reality is, as we grow up and we become more mature, it goes back to a meme that I saw, never make fun of a fat person in the gym. At least, you know, I've stuck with that. It's easy to walk in and say, oh my gosh, what's that person doing here? Well, they're trying to get better. And so we need to be thinking of things through that lens as opposed to one of being judgmental or whatever. But the reality is, I feel like that the people who really subscribe to the hustle mentality are people who are willing to invest in other people, share their story. And in many times, we're in a really bad spot before they got to where they are, and they don't want to see other people do that. There's plenty of people who have always been in great shape. They've had great habits. They push themselves and they've never known another way. But I think that community and the fact that people do actually remember what it was like before, whether it be in business, whether it be in family, whether it be in your physical fitness, your spiritual journey, whatever it is, you have to have people in your life that are, number one, going to hold you accountable, be mentors that show you the way. But number three, really needs to be done with some level of grace and inclusion, because I think that's what, you know, everybody's got a different language that they respond to. Some people would just rather you come with a baseball bat and whack them in the shins, you know, because that's what motivates them. But then there's other people who just want somebody to say, you know what? Great job, man. That's 2 more pounds that you're down from last week, as opposed to, why didn't you lose 5? Why didn't you lose 10? You know? So I think it's really, really important for the people who have it dialed in, for the people who have shown some level of success and they've got, you know, got things figured out. Number one, it's important for people to realize that most of us don't have every single thing figured out. But number two, I feel like there's just so many people out there that seem to have achieved so much more than I am. But the reality is, they're as approachable as the guy next door to me if you reach out to them.
100%. And so I want to, before we end, my father and my mother always taught me that you have to give before you ask. So I want to give your listeners something and ask for just one thing in return. Is that okay?
Go ahead, man. Absolutely. Okay.
First and foremost, starting today, and I know that this episode will air in a little bit, but starting today, when you hear this episode, if you go to keephustlingshop.com, there will be a discount code in there. We're going to do Power 10.
Oh, sweet, man. Thank you.
Podcast, and that'll be 10% off for all the listeners of this podcast. And what I ask, the only thing that I'm going to ask in return is that we're on all the social media platforms. When you get the swag, if you like it, not for me, not for the brand, but tag, you know what? Just post a picture. If you want to tag us, that would be great for the brand. But if not, post a picture of yourself hustling, because I know that there are people who you would least expect being inspired by that. And that's what we're trying to do. Find your favorite tagline, embrace the hustle, embrace your hustle, and just give us a tag, because we would love to see and help us make a greater impact on the world and on those around us. So again, discount code POWER10. I hope we put it in the show notes, but POWER10 will get you 10% off. And just spread the love so that we can inspire others to embrace their hustle every day.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take it a step further, because this is my show and I get to ask these questions. Aaron's being far too kind and humble in what he's doing. What I want you to do is I want you to take a picture of you wearing whatever it is that you get, and I want you to tag him. I want you to tag his company. Use whatever hashtag you want, but then I want you to tag whatever famous person has inspired you the most on their social, because my guy needs the reach, people. We want to get this out there. We don't want to leave it in just a small circle. This is a movement. This is a community that he's building, And the only way we're going to get that is through brand awareness. So I would ask that you would do that as a favor to me. If you ever learned anything on this show that's helped you close that extra deal or make that extra dollar for your company, that's how you pay me back. I don't ask you guys for money in anything. So if you would do that, I would greatly appreciate it. One more time on the website, one more time on the coupon code, and then we'll wrap up.
KeepHustlingShop.com, coupon code, discount code, POWER10. And really, really thank you, David.
Absolutely, 100%. Ladies and gentlemen, he has been my good friend, Mr. Aaron Gordon. I have to tell you, this guy doesn't just talk the talk. He walks the walk. And Aaron doesn't know this, but the number of times that he has spoken about behind closed doors of how generous he is when you go to New York City and visit. You know, I remember the first time we went, there was a bottle of champagne in the Ritz-Carlton room when Annie and I got there with a note from Aaron that just said, hashtag keep hustling. When we went up with the group for Doug Benn's event, where we went to Lloyd's of America's and met with Hank Watkins, and then over to the Tech Accelerator and met with those people, and then went to the dinner at the New York Athletic Club. Part of our daytime activity when all of the business stuff was over is we had lunch at Tavern on the Green. My man sent a massive bottle for us to toast with Keep Hustling from the people at Tavern on the Green. And when I got in a pinch and I needed some reservations for a freaking bucket list restaurant experience, he's the dude that stepped up. So I want you guys to understand, if you're one of those people that's out there on the sidelines, think, this guy's just out there building this for himself, he's really just talking a bunch of smack. No, he lives it. I've experienced it firsthand. You know, he even took Grayson and I to the kosher steakhouse for dinner one night. And that's something that Grayson talks about on a regular basis is, you know, that was really a great dinner. So glad we got to spend that time with Aaron. So he's one of the good guys. He's one of the most genuine people that you'll ever meet in the industry. Just because you think something of somebody doesn't mean it's a reality. And I ask that you please just go to his shop, take in what he has to offer. If something makes sense, get it. Tag him, use the hashtag, tag somebody famous who's inspired you for their hustle, and we all get better as a result. So, Mr. Gordon.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
A great week, man.
Amazing, kind words. Thank you. You're the best.
All right, brother. Have a good one, man. We'll talk soon.
Been listening to Power Producers Shop Talk. You can follow us at the Power Producers Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to take your game to the next level, check out our commercial insurance training course at killingcommercial.com or visit Amazon to pick up a copy of our international best-selling book, The Extra 2 Minutes.